Welcome back to the Unbuild It podcast. I'm Jake Bruton. Today, I am joined by my normal co-host, Peter Yost.
Glad to be here.
And why do you always go to him first?
Alphabetical? Like, I don't know.
It's like, oh, this is the Jake and Peter show. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Alphabetical last name or first name?
First name. Oh, okay. I know how the alphabet works.
I wasn't sure you knew my last name.
Okay, well, yeah. Now I'm not sure if I know your last name. I'm joined by Peter Yost and Steve Basic.
Howdy. We're in Texas.
Yes, we are in Texas.
So you can speak like you're in Texas.
So he's going to say howdy in every episode now.
Yeah, we'll say howdy.
So today's conversation is Peter and I are a little bit uninformed. The kind of topic was just floated by Steve.
Ooh, I like that. Floated. That's a good word choice.
Thank you. I knew you'd catch on.
So, I don't get it.
Well, hang with me then. Okay. Today we are going to talk about job site water, but we're not just going to talk about water that is on the job site. We're going to talk about, do we call it groundwater? Well,
I thought it was, the topic was site hydrology. We're doing an episode on crying, right? Because it's site hydrology.
Weeping.
Weeping. Yeah, there you go.
Site weeping.
I'm happy I'm sitting between these two. This is my career choice. And this is what there, I have done.
There's some kind of song that's something weeping, right? I wanted to hum a few bars of that.
While my guitar gently
weeps.
Just so
while
we're clear,
my sight gently weeps.
We're in Texas. I have left my family for this. I traveled halfway across the country for
probably
this.
I feel good about that. Sorry.
So, tell us about site hydrology. So,
well, Peter, it began back in 32. Great flood.
Pete was there.
as a fine young man, might I add, right?
I'm not really sure if I was there or not.
How many of the stories from the Old Testament were you present for?
No. All right. I have to be serious here. Someone's got to be. So, site hydrology. Before we get into the specific site, one of the things I want to mention that has been somewhat clear or apparent to me is, you know, one of the finite things we have, obviously, is land. And it seems like as we go on in time that the properties get more and more challenging, mm-hmm. right? Now, occasionally we do a tear down and it's a nice, easy lot. But if you're looking for...
We keep expanding further away.
Yeah, we're moving out of that town into the next town. And that town, like, you know, 80% of the good lots are taken. So people now have to move over to this one. So we're working on currently on a project right now where the lot that we cleared or the place that we cleared on the lot sits right at the foot. It's probably about a 400-foot hill that is all rock ledge. And so
non-absorptive.
Yeah. So the site gently weeps. It's in a perpetual state of weeping. And, you know, I would consider it a challenging site. Right. And so identifying that problem, I mean, you can go to, as you drive down the driveway, you can go to the left side of the site, as dry as can be. You go to the right side where we have about a 12-foot excavated wall of earth. It's half ledge and some dirt, but it's, you can go on out there on a nice hot summer day and it's all wet at the bottom of it. And, you know, so doing a project there, it's the thing with water is that it's always going to be there. Like there's this 400-foot hill, like it's not going to dry up. It's not a marshland where, hey, if we elevate the ground another 3 feet or something, we could potentially dry it. This is a problem that we have basically a very low flowing, you know, perpetual marsh on this property.
It has
like a marsh on a steep property.
Yeah, where it's a plane of water that moves down the hill. It's not like you can just go over and pinpoint and say, hey, here's where all the water's coming. We'll divert that.
Right.
It's not that. It's the whole hillside is pressing water in somewhat of a uniform state.
And so because there's so much rock near the surface, you know, a lot of steep hills, they just absorb a whole lot of water because they've got a lot of depth and capacity. What you're saying is on this site, there's a bunch of places where there's not a lot of holding capacity.
No, I mean, there's a lot of rock there. And if you go there, I mean, if we went there right this minute, we could probably pinpoint four or five locations where there's a drip, drip,
yeah,
drip.
Yeah, it feels very much like there should be five little Danish boys putting their finger in the dam in a bunch of different places, but they would also put their finger in and then it would start leaking 3 inches over.
Right. So the question is now, it's like we have this challenging site. Certainly we have to be concerned with it, right? Because it's one of these things that isn't ever going to go away. And it's something you have to solve for, and you probably can't solve for it in what I would consider a micro location, right? Years ago, I got called in on a project to do a building investigation. It was a similar site. Mm-hmm. And their answer was, well, we'll put a perimeter drain around the house and we'll pump it into this septic tank 30 feet over in the front yard. It was probably more like 50 feet.
A septic tank?
Yeah. It just basically, it's like a French drain, but instead of filling it with stone, we would buy, and I've done this on projects, we buy a big, like, I don't know, 1600, 1800 gallon tank. You pump the water in and it slowly perks it into the ground.
Okay.
So it's just, you're just creating more storage capacity in the ground, right? And the time when I went out there, it was like just raining and literally like the cover was bubbling.
So and even 1800 gallons wasn't even close to.
Well, I looked at the guy and I said, you know, I don't mean to sound insulting, but what made you think?
What the hell?
But what the hell? I mean, I was getting paid for it. What made you think that grabbing water over there and pumping it 60 feet over here when you have that giant rock hill there was going to solve the problem?
Yeah.
Right. This isn't about let's just move it from point A to B. It's we got to allow nature's course to happen, but somehow insert the building there. And they didn't do that.
So how much of the original design of this building was based on what you knew to be a weeping wall site?
Well, a lot of decisions, and some of those are even going to be a future podcast where we'll talk about the foundation system and that. But the idea was if we put a house there, the belt and suspenders approach.
Mm-hmm.
The first approach is how do we get water to just give it a path, you know, of mitigation underneath the building and just let it freely flow underground like it is, but we'll just give it a path to flow there. And at the front edge of that path, we put a 6-inch perforated pipe in.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're capturing, you know, what I would consider the majority of it. We're taking it around the house and then we're discharging it on the other side. We had to go literally around the house and off to the side, because if we just went down the side, we would have been dumping it into the neighbor's property. And so the clients wanted to be respectful. So we brought it around even further and we're trying to perk most of it on their property or get it back into the ground to become that. So the 6-inch pipe takes the majority. What that pipe doesn't capture simply migrates under the house, because the whole house is on, you know, the guy there called it trap rock. There's probably a tons of different names. I know trap rock is every rock is probably the size of your fist, right? It's big rock. You can't rake it. You put it down, you grade it with a little bobcat or skid steer, and then you put a smaller, like 3 or 4 inch stone bed on top of that, which is what they did to level it. And then we put the footing, our foundation system on top of that. But this house basically has about 12 plus inches of a stone, which is a migratory path for all of the water that comes down the hill.
So did you work with like a hydraulic engineer or this was just?
No, I just put my hydraulic engineer hat on.
Gotcha. Okay. So I bet you if I were to go to the USDA web soil survey, if you give me the address, we could do a little bit of
God, he loves checking that website. Out.
He does love that website.
Sorry.
You plug it in and you get your 4-page report.
So
that's it right out.
Well, hold on. I want to back up for a minute.
And Jake, you've been out to the site, just so people know.
Besides Peter's web soil survey pornography site, how do we know that water's going to be prevalent to begin with? Like, if you are both starting a new project, how does that topic of water come up, and how do we try to resolve what knowledge we have, or how do we align our knowledge of how much water is on the site before we start digging?
I mean, for me, it's site visits. I mean, I probably had a half a dozen site visits before we put the rock down. And then probably another handful of visits after that, just looking at other stuff. But, you know, when you go there and there's nothing there, just the holes excavated, and you just see pools of water on a sunny day.
Yeah.
You know that, okay, water's coming down here. It's drying, but the rate of drying doesn't equal the rate of wetting. Like, there's just a lot of water coming and it's sitting at the bottom of this hole. And so putting the stone in, that water is probably still sitting. I mean, the hole underneath, that's why I called it a marsh. The hole underneath of the house probably has water, you know, just migrating underneath it.
So part of your design was to divert what you can, but then let the rest continue to flow, but just in a way that you are managing that flow.
Yeah. I mean, my fear is what if that pipe clogs?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. What happens then? And we did. You'll be happy to know. I'll be gone. Checks cashed by then anyway. So yeah. What does it matter? No, you'll be happy to know we have a nice clean out that comes out to grade. Yeah. So we can snake that, you know, and it's easy to see. You can go down to the end of the pipe and you can see water literally dripping out of it.
Yeah.
Almost any time of day. But in answer to your question, like, how do you know? Going to a job site, and I think we've said it before, I said it in talks, like, on these challenging sites, getting out to the site, go on a rainy day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
See what the hell's happening. Right. So that'll tell you a lot, you know, show up there, walk around with an umbrella.
So since you had all this rock real close to the surface, did you have to do any blasting, or was it trap rock stuff?
They chipped a bunch of the rock in the corner. There's a bunch of ledge that we had to chip out.
I mean, this makes me think of projects that you go into that are old New England homes, and when they hit rock close to the surface, they just built the foundation around it.
Yeah, I've been in houses that have the ledge is in the basement, yep. Like in that corner, just the ledge goes up. Our structural engineer has a rule that you either pin the whole foundation a ledge, or you take the ledge out and we do a traditional foundation. He doesn't accommodate kind of a half ledge, half basement conception.
So did you change? I know this is getting into the episode about foundations, but because of the nature of the site and the geology, did you change the design of the house or the foundation to tune it to the?
Well, it just so happens with the homeowner, we moved to a precast offsite foundation system, Superior Walls.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And the beauty of that is Superior Walls doesn't have a footing system. And
except hold it's on. Built into the bottom of the panel.
Right? I don't think doesn't have a foundation, well, footing system.
Doesn't correct. Have a concrete there footing go. System. And we'll get into that because I think we're going to do a podcast where we just talk about offsite. But not having that footing means I don't have, it's a, let's call it a barrier-free under foundation wall system. Mm-hmm. How's that?
Drainable footing.
Drainable footing.
Which is actually, when we were on site and talking about the Superior Wall, the first thing that came to my mind is like, that's the same setup that permanent wood foundations ask yep. for too. Yep. It's like, oh, we backfill with a ton of gravel so that things can dry. It sits on a ton of gravel so it can dry. Oh, you mean we're doing everything we can to not hold water in tension? That seems like everything we do above grade too. Yep. Just I look at it as rock and I forget that it's drainage plane sometimes. That's why it works for radon mitigations, because it's a pathway, right?
Yes. Yes. And that's the other beauty of that is, you know, putting the radon pipe in with all of that rock, we have a really good area of capture for the radon by having that underneath there too. So, but it, you know, with if you had mentioned it on the news, like last week, what did he say? They got 4 inches of rain in like 8 hours or something. It was incredible. Like streets washed away in this town.
And the soil was already saturated.
And I asked them, were you up there?
This is the Lemonster project?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They got nailed. Yeah.
And asked him if he went out. He's like, yeah, I was out at the site. And I said, how did it fare? And he said, yeah, there were a couple places where I could see wetness at the top of the stone, which I would consider that highly successful.
Yeah.
Right. That you just saw.
And terrifying.
Well, yeah.
So yeah. how deep is the free draining?
It's probably about a foot worth of stone.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's probably like, 10 or 12 inches of trap rock, a couple inches, so maybe a little taller.
And how did the leveling bed. Who came up with that and how did they come up with?
Well, it's part of the Superior Wall, but the site, the guys that dug the foundation and stuff, you know, they said, we'll put this stone in. And I talked with the homeowner about the strategy of we should probably ensure that any water under the building can migrate from the right side to the left side and just move underneath the building. Basically, it's the house is conceptually a raft.
And right. So I would assume the Superior Wall system started with the stone foundation idea because they're showing up and trying to set their panels in one day. Like if they have to go the first day and form a footing and the next day pour a footing and then the next day accept their panels and set, like you've screwed their timelines and now they're dealing with subcontractor work. Yeah. But if there's a gravel grade there, they can rake it to what they need it to be very quickly, probably as they're setting panels.
Well, I think it was also they don't have to cast a footing because in real cold weather, what do you do?
Yeah.
So part of it is the Superior Walls was a cold climate technology and they wanted to eliminate the need for a separate cast of the load bearing bottom.
That's why the permanent wood foundations are popular in the north too.
Exactly.
And we can reserve that because there's a lot of things to talk about that system and what they did and why I think they did it. But you're right. If you do the stone, you're going to like this. I remember this from college. There's a thing called the angle of repose, I believe.
It is. Yes.
Right. And so it says that
the title of my biography as well, hopefully.
Yeah. So that, you know, as you flare out, if it's a 10-inch wall, then, you know, in 10 or 12 inches of stone, that wall is actually bearing on about 20 inches
of
soil below.
Yeah. It's like a footing in itself. Yeah.
So it is working. So it's not, you can't think of it as the wall as it trying to puncture the stone. The minute it engages the stone, it flares out like a belled type footing, theoretically through the stone. So that depending on the depth of the stone, it's just going to keep getting wider and wider, right? In this kind of pyramid shape from the edge of it. So it works quite well in that sense. But the idea of, you know, this is the first time I've ever, suggested that we intentionally move water under the house.
Right.
Like we've always moved it around the house. And this one would have been, it said, it's easy to move it around the back. It would have been very difficult to bring it around the front because there's a huge appendage that's the garage and all of that. It would have just been a challenge.
It reminds me of when we space the deck ledger off the rim joist, like we can't figure out how to stop it. Let's just let it go through. Yeah. And that seems totally counterintuitive, but that's what you're doing, but at a soil level or at a site level.
I don't know if I showed you yet, but you know, when I'm talking about control layers now, I got new Steve thoughts.
And are these ones that you can share with the rest of the world?
So when we talk, no, these are like legit.
Okay.
Man. So when we're talking about water management, like for me, the three keywords are protection, mitigation, and prevention. Right. Okay. So the first rule of water management is
very close to avoiding teen pregnancy, too.
Yeah.
Protection.
It's scary that your mind goes there. But
you do know this is called the Unbuild It
podcast. You know what I watched this morning as a side note? Dazed and Confused. One of my favorite lines. It's like, I might get older every year, but the high school girls stay the same age.
Oh, protection, boy. Mitigation, and what?
And prevention. So the first rule of water management is don't let it see water, right? Put an umbrella, get rid of it.
Yep.
If you can't solve for protection, then you have to provide mitigation, which is what I would label this as, right? The prevention and all of it, it's hard to do water management and not insert at least some aspect of each of these, right?
Sure.
Because it's arguable that the 6-inch pipe in front of the stone bed or embedded in the first edge of that stone bed is some level of protection, right? Like let's get rid of the water before the foundation has to see it.
Right.
The second is the stone bed is the mitigation and doing a stego wrap and, you know, vapor retarder from trying to get water to move upwards. That's the mitigation process. And then prevention, that's the one where this one probably doesn't, because doesn't really play a major role, because we're accepting the water, we're letting it pass, and it's sure. basically carrying through its natural course of action. We're just putting a house on top of the path.
It's funny, rather than prevention, it's like allowance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's that whole mitigation process of bringing it in and dealing with it. Right. So, and it's funny because, you know, the three of us know, but a lot of people have a hard time. If you took a simple rain screen system mm-hmm. on a wall and you rotate it at 90 degrees, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
The stone is nothing more than a horizontal underground rain screen system.
Yep. It's just your drainage find. Okay. I have one for you that I think, Steve, you and I have talked about, but I'm not sure if I've ever had a conversation with Peter about it. This was probably 2 years or 3 years into me owning the business. So we're talking 15 years ago, 13 years ago, something like that. Where I live in Missouri, Columbia,
you look a lot older.
Is close to late bloomer, is close to the Missouri River. You know, mm-hmm. it's 20 minutes from my house. There are quite a few little river towns that have histories of flooding that every time the spring rain comes, they call for people to come and sandbag. And I think, wouldn't it be easier to just move? Mm-hmm. But they love their little towns. And I had some potential clients come to me and share with me a set of plans that we ended up not building the house. And as far as I know, the house didn't get built because that piece of property is still vacant. That had a floating basement assembly is the best I can say. So their idea, and I think their architect was from St. Louis, and I've looked and haven't been able to find any notes on it. A regular cast in place foundation, basement foundation, and then with some keyways in it. And then 6 inches inside of that with pegs connecting to those keyways, a second concrete foundation with the idea that if the water got high enough to flood, the house would float inside cup number one and rise up. And I showed it to my concrete guy and he went, no, I don't want to be involved with this. Like he immediately said no, but like in the first 2 or 3 minutes. But I come back to that when I think about like sites like that, that have tons of water, that like their solution was to not build the house up high enough that it wouldn't flood, was to let it flood. And if I remember correctly, I only had a couple days with these plants. If I remember correctly, I don't remember them having anything sorted out for electrical connection, sewer connection, or water connection, how it wouldn't just cause a problem when it came apart. But they did have a exterior staircase that went down to that basement level so that it could be like accessed and cleaned out. Like some pumped out or something.
And it had like multiple hinge points. So the stair could just.
No, it was the basement stair was in the outside.
I'm thinking of like building tidal with a dock that floats to the angle.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
And if you talk about worrying about site water, and I was still very fresh. Now, if somebody brought me that, I would have been like, why don't we just put it up a little higher? Like, why don't we just move it up a little bit or not build? Put it on a
foot of stone. And so I did one, probably the most expensive foundation I've ever seen. The house was it's a 28,000 square foot house. So the footprint.
Modest.
Yeah, very modest. The footprint was probably on the order of.
Hold on. We're in Texas. 28,000 square feet is like
mid-level. Yeah, that's mid-level, like garage, right? Mid-level okay. starter home. But in New England. You know, it was probably somewhere on the order of 16,000 square foot footprint. And it was 16 feet in the ground. And they excavated the ground. They put in 2 feet of stone with all kinds of drainage pipe. And we're talking a foundation hole that was probably 250 feet by maybe 110 feet, 16 feet deep. Like they had real trucks there, not just an excavator. Like they had a ramp into the hole where they were hauling stuff out of the hole. But they did the 2 feet or so of stone. They had a bunch of pipe in there. They had their sump pit was probably about 8 or 10 foot square, and it was about 4 foot deep. And that's where the pumps and stuff. So everything kind of went in there. But the idea was, on top of that stone, they poured a 12-inch slab. And the slab wasn't the foundation. The slab was the barrier. So they poured the slab and then they waterproofed the top of it. Mm-hmm. So now they had this waterproof slab on 2 feet of stone on the pipe that drained. And then they put the footings. It was probably about 3 or 4 feet wider than the house. And then they poured and cast the footings on that. And then they brought the waterproofing up the footing and up the wall. So it was all connected to the top of the sub slab, the structural slab. Yeah. And then
does
the wall.
Does this guy own a concrete ready-mix company?
No, the concrete futures, though.
Were. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Well, he did deal in futures because I asked the builder. I said, what does this guy do? He says, well, let me just put it this way. This guy here, he makes like a penny every time he moves a dollar. He just moves billions of dollars. Right. So, but anyways, the foundation wall above that was
a lot of pennies, Peter.
16 inches thick and it was about 16 feet tall. So it was a massive foundation. I have pictures of it somewhere that I have to.
But I like that. I like the idea of we have this like total barrier and then we're going to build on top of that.
Yeah.
So how did they treat the cold joints between the different pores?
They just brought the waterproofing. It connected from that structural slab up onto the footing, and then it went up.
And when you say waterproofing, was it like a elastic
polymer? It was some kind of like trowel on, roll on kind of real ugly crap. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then when they backfilled, that was interesting too, because they put steel sheeting in at about 2 feet off of the wall. They backfilled it with stone and then the excavator pulled and they backfilled the other side with dirt and then they pulled the steel sheeting out. So they had a filter fabric.
Yeah.
Right. So, so basically the whole 16 foot worth of wall had 2 feet of stone that went down into the drainage system. And I talked to the builder, like those pumps are perpetually working. It's like a literally a boat. It's a boat.
Well, and it's so big that any water that gets underneath of it can't just run 30 feet to a spot where the pressure is relieved. You're 200 feet from where you need to be.
Yeah.
I like that. It's not very often you see a proportional approach.
On a house like that, did they have a hydrologist or a hydraulic engineer?
I'm sure they had some type of Peter's civil engineering.
Soil sample survey.
They went on the website and got a little 4-page report. They plugged in the address,
you guys,
they were good. I mean, it's only
laugh and you think we're just picking at you. I'm not sure if you know how often you bring up that website, like.
I'm surprised
you don't have a t-shirt with that.
His wife probably says, I think I'm developing a cough. Well, hey, there's this website. You can go check this soil sample website. You can go check this, and it might not do anything for your cough, but at least we'll know what the hydrology of our site here is.
The dirt on Peter Yost.
Ooh, the dirt.
There we go.
I like that.
Okay, so we're talking protection, mitigation, and prevention, and a recipe that involves probably all three. But a different amount of each one, depending on your site hydrology.
Yeah. And I think that those three are kind of an abacus that sometimes this one's to the right, sometimes this one's to the right, sometimes this one's to the left, whatever the case is. But it's understanding what is the problem, so I can identify the solution.
So, Steve, on both the house that you're currently working on and this other one you're referring to, what about the load coming off the building? Was part of how they did the drainage around the building tied to how they're going to manage the water coming off?
So the one that we are doing right now will have a secondary system that'll be, a few feet in the ground that gets connected to the downspouts.
Oh, so we'll have gutters.
Yes. We'll have gutters and then those will go into a ground system that goes pretty much. It's a belt around the house.
And I'm asking that because there are architects and I'm not criticizing it. They don't like to see ugly metal gutters cover the nice trim work they designed around the eaves and the rakes. So,
Your choices are you can either see the ugly gutters or you can see the beautiful trim turn ugly in a couple years. Right. So it's a value question for you.
Well, and the architect doesn't have to give a warranty. So,
yeah.
Okay. In summation, understanding what's on your site.
You just brought up a good point, though, because I'm doing a project in Colorado and I wanted to do gutterless house. Sure.
Yeah.
And the builder would not do it. He goes, I'm not going to warranty it. Not with the soil there.
He said he's going to have to replace gutters once a year.
We have to put gutters on because he said the soil's so expansive there. He goes, I don't trust it.
That's
so
interesting. What you said is that there's a difference between, you know, water falling 15 feet off the eave and hitting sandy loam as compared to expansive clay. I mean, that's a huge issue. Yeah.
It's a different ballgame. But I commend him for saying, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a recipe for failure.
Does have to carry the warranty.
Yeah.
And you just described situations where if the soil or the water is the problem, why couldn't on this project in Colorado, why couldn't you excavate and remove enough of the clay?
Well, that was my plan, is to put in a filter fabric and put in like a 3-foot square stone bed with a pipe down the middle. He still didn't trust it.
Oh, interesting. Because you would think if you gave a 3-foot band around the house to deal with the contraction expansion of the clay, that would be enough for the builder.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you got to remember that builders are up for trying new things so long as their grandfather has already done it. On that note, we want to say thanks for listening today.
Did we just do a podcast?
We did. We were recording, Pete.
Oh, okay, I'm here.
Dementia setting. But that's all right. We've only been on for a couple minutes.
He's having a flare up.
It's okay. Peter, this is where you say welcome to the podcast.
I do remember I made a joke about site hydrology and weeping.
Yeah, we went there right by that.
If you're new to the podcast, make sure you subscribe on whatever audio platform you listen. Also, you can find the podcast on YouTube. And now you can find the podcast on the Build Show Network, where Steve and I are both producing videos. Steve's working through his Build Show Build Boston series currently, if that helps you date when this podcast came out. And both of us are producing weekly content. Peter, if you live close enough to him, you can hear him scream at animals in his backyard from time to time. That's the easiest place to find Peter, is if you hear someone cursing at what sounds like
an animal. Or on the seashore taking in a sunrise or sunset.
I just have a closing question. Am I allowed to use my favorite website as one of the resources? Yes,
you are.
Okay, cool.
Resources. The Canadian version of resource.
The resources.
Okay, thanks for listening for today.
Projects. It's projects, resources.
We're happy we're here. Have a good day.
See ya.
What, how do you say bye-bye in cowboy? Like, you say howdy when you see people. What do you?
Bye, y'all.